So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger, because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, this is Chad Dotson. You're listening to Red Leg Nation Radio. With me again, my good buddy Bill Lack. How you doing today, Bill?
I'm doing fine. Things are going well.
Things are going well with the Reds, and we're going to talk about that, certainly. But there's something I wanted to mention to you, actually. I was sort of looking back at this podcast, and we're at episode number 142 of the podcast now. And I was looking back to see, looks like the very first episode you and I did back in 2007.
Holy cow.
Can you believe that?
We really need to get a life.
We really do. We're still, it really is kind of sad that here 9 years later, we're still just sitting around talking about the Reds. It's been an interesting 9 years for the Reds. That first one was an interview you did with a young guy who, you know, we used to do this spotlight player profile thing for the website at redlegnation.com, and it was Thomas Pauley. You remember talking to Thomas?
Yeah, I remember him. I hooked up with him while I was on vacation in Sarasota. Met him at his house, and we had a nice conversation. I wonder whatever happened to him.
Yeah, we need to maybe get him back on and talk to him one of these days. He was the illustrious guest for episode number one. So
yeah, he was a high draft pick, and then he ended up hurting his arm. He was one of those guys that hurt their arm and never really came back.
Yeah, it happens to the best of them, unfortunately. So, well, let's get to talking about the current day Reds rather than former prospects of the Reds. And I guess the place to start here, the place we have to start, is of course the trade of Jay Bruce. You've heard of Jay Bruce, right?
Yeah, I remember hearing the name.
Yeah, he played some for the Reds. He was traded this week at the trade deadline, as we all know. Traded to the New York Mets. The Reds in return from the Metropolitans got Dilson Herrera, second baseman, and Max Wotell, a very, very young left-handed pitcher, 18, 19 years old, third-round draft pick. Wotell was a third-round draft pick of the Mets. He'd been at Kingsport of the rookie Appalachian League this year, and he's with Billings now, rookie Pioneer League. Dilson Herrera, of course, has been up and down some, has played a significant amount with the Mets on and off for the last couple years. Just 22 years old. And, you know, we can discuss whether or not Herrera is going to be a good player, whether he's going to be a future all-star, as some pundits have said. But really the talk here and really the discussion around Cincinnati and around Red Leg Nation is Jay Bruce. You know, long, fine career as a Red, great guy. Are you as sorry to see him go as I am?
Oh, yeah, very much so. I watched Jay from – I probably saw Jay before 99% of the Reds fans out there. I saw Jay Bruce play in the Gulf Coast League. We were down – and I may have told this story before. If I do, I apologize. But we were on vacation in Sarasota when Jay was playing in the Gulf Coast League, and the Gulf Coast League guys played at noon.
Oh, gosh.
In Sarasota, and I called the Reds office up there, and I said, are these games open to the public? And you could tell it hit them weird, because they went, yeah. And I said, do I need to buy tickets? They said, no. And I got there, and I was the only person in the stands. I mean, there weren't a concession stand open, bathroom, nothing. I mean, it was – and, in fact, that was the day I met one of our first spotlight players. That was the day I met Bo Lanier.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I can still remember talking to Bo and another young man whose name escapes me at the moment. And I asked them about Jay Bruce, and they both said at the same time, he can rake. So I saw Jay play there. I saw him play quite a bit in Dayton. In fact, I did an interview with him for the podcast in Dayton. It was the only time I've ever gone on the field. And then we were in Sarasota when he was playing high A ball, when he got the game where he got promoted, because they pulled him out in the middle of the game, and he was coaching first base after he'd been taken out of the game, and you could just tell he was smiling and laughing, and we were in the first row behind the dugout. I yelled out, I said, "Jay, did you just get promoted?" And he shook his head, "Yeah." And I was at Great American, not the day he started. I think he came up on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, and I was there that Friday. And if you remember right, the first week, I mean, he was on fire.
Oh, yeah.
Looked like a Hall of Famer the first week. I mean, I kept telling people he was going to be the mayor of the city in about two more weeks. But, you know, Jay's, you know, there have been a times when Jay's talent was frustrating. But at the end of the year, most years, he's had struggles the last couple of years, but most years he came out with pretty good numbers at the end of the year. And the one thing you can say about Jay Bruce, he was always a class act for the Reds.
From day one. And a couple things to build off what you just said. I agree 100% with all of that, obviously. After his first week with the Reds, he was hitting .577 with three home runs and seven RBIs, which is a little bit more than amazing. Now, I don't think I told you that I was going to do this, but it just published it today. I called it a Red Leg Nation flashback or something. But I did a new post and linked it back to that interview you did with Jay Bruce standing in the dugout at Fifth Third Field there in Dayton. And so if you go to redlegnation.com right now, you'll see, you can find Bill's interview that he did with a very young Jay Bruce. And it's got a picture that I've added to the post of Jay looking dashing as a 19-year-old with hair that looks like he's stepped right out of a boy band.
And he looks like he's about 12.
Oh, he really does. I mean, he just you can't believe this guy is a guy that's on the verge of coming to the big leagues, which he was very shortly thereafter. But it's a good little interview, and again, you know, taking some time. That was back in 2006, April of 2006, Bill.
Holy cow.
So over 10 years ago, and take some time for you, and that was fantastic. You know, the part that I think about when I think about Jay, obviously, and it's where you went with your comments, obviously Jay Bruce, you know, averaged, let's see, I have it down here, you know, averaged 32 home runs and 100 and some RBIs for a 3 or 4 year stretch. And you know, he's been three-time All-Star and has just been, yeah, I mean, you know, he sometimes people got frustrated because he was the number one draft pick and he never did quite become a legend in franchise history. And he did have these last 2 years that he was hurt and then got in a funk and they really were bad. But everyone, I think, was so happy to see Jay Bruce back, not just because he was helping the Reds, but because he's always been, from day one, even when he struggled, never causing any problems, always smiling, always a great guy. And I've talked to a lot of people on and off the record around the Reds, and to a man, I've never heard anyone say a single thing bad about dealing with Jay Bruce. So the Reds are going to miss him. I don't think they should have traded him. I still maintain that, but it is what it is. And I was really happy to see him hit a three-run homer last night for the Mets to give them that was the difference in their victory. So
he's just going to look. He just looks wrong in that uniform.
No, he does. He does. Yeah, you know, you talked about the first time you saw him play. And speaking of New York, the first time I actually saw him play was in New York, of all places. And earlier this week, I wrote a piece about Jay for Cincinnati Magazine, and just sort of my personal reminiscences about him. And the first one that I talked about was being in New York City. He'd been a Red for about a month at that point, and they were getting ready to play the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. I thought, oh, that's a great time to go see the Reds at Yankee Stadium. Had never been to Yankee Stadium before, and get him to get to see Jay play right field out there, the same right field that was manned by the best right fielder in Yankees history, Paul O'Neill. Oh no, maybe Babe Ruth. But you know, I'm walking around the city and there are Reds fans everywhere. You know, they're sort of buzzing. which was strange to see Reds fans there, or people purporting to be Reds fans. And I saw no fewer than 10 people with these Reds, I call them jerseys, you know, these shirt jerseys that said Jay Bruce, you know, Bruce 32 on the back. And I'm like, whoa, you know, this guy's been in the big leagues for a month, and there are the people walking around with Jay Bruce shirts here in New York City. And I think he went 1-for-4. I looked it up. I think he went 1-for-4 the day that I saw him. But, you know, he was still hitting, you know, 315, 406 on base, 500 slug, and still playing great. And, you know, a legend wasn't born that month, although it started to seem like it the way he hit when he first came up. But I think it's a guy that Cincinnati sports fans are going to remember very fondly for a long, long time. I hope so, anyway.
I hope so, too. You can look at the last couple of years when he struggled. But always a smile. And let's also be honest, he stayed a pretty healthy ball player.
Yeah, until that injury in, what, 14 or whenever that was. He really was, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when he broke his wrist, wasn't it? Or no, was that the knee?
That was the knee. I think he hurt the wrist. Maybe that was the wrist, and then the knee was later.
Yeah, because he only did – I mean, even then he played 137 games.
Yeah, that's Jay.
Yeah. And I mean, he was 155 and up player almost every season. I mean
– And he did get some criticism and maybe some deserved criticism. He wasn't very good the last couple of years. But he's the type of guy that I feel like, as Reds fans sort of look back on his career and get a little bit away from some of the day-to-day criticisms, I think people are going to remember that, number one, that he was a great guy, never caused any problems. And then when you combine that with, you look at his numbers, and he did have several years, you know, where he was very, very productive. And, you know, I just feel like he's going to come out of this smelling like a rose in some ways.
And the iconic home run, you know.
Yeah, we've gone this long into talking about Jay Bruce, and that's the first time we've mentioned that moment, which is burned in everyone's memory.
Right.
Clinchmas.
I mean, it was probably the biggest single Reds home run since one of Bench's in the 76 World Series, probably. Or the Eric Davis one in 1990.
I would say probably the Eric Davis one.
Yeah,
and then probably before that you go back to Bench, and of course we're talking about iconic moments in this franchise's history.
Yeah,
you know that we're never gonna be forgotten.
So. Yeah, and we haven't even touched on how well he played right field.
Oh yeah, for years. There's been some criticism the last year or two about that he's lost a step, but for a time, there's no question in my mind, he was the best, don't you think? The best right fielder.
I think the best all-around right fielder. You know, it might be somebody with a little bit better arm, but, you know, they had a tendency to drop balls or they weren't as consistent. You know, you can talk about the Puig kid out in L.A. I mean, he's done some phenomenal things in right field, but, you know, he's also taken some plays off.
Yeah, Bruce and just his gun. There probably were some players with better arms, but man, there weren't many, because you watch Bruce out there in right field, and he made a couple throws that always made me think of a couple things. Made me think of Paul O'Neill's throw in the National League Championship Series in 1990, and and of course Dave Parker's legendary throw in the he wasn't a Red at the time, but in the All Star Game 78, whenever that was. And it seemed like Bruce was doing that early in his career until people quit running on him. It seemed like he was doing that over and over, just gunning people down at third base.
Yep. And I thought it was interesting the other day that, you know, it was either the day or 2 days after Jay was gone, the Scheibler kid in right field gunned some guy at second base, tried to take an extra base on him, and nailed him.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, okay, next, you know.
Right, yeah. And then Scheibler, a couple of innings later, jumped over the fence and robbed a home run.
Right. I didn't see that, but I read about it in the paper.
Yeah. So, not making us forget Jay Bruce just yet, but
no. And if this gets Jay into the World Series, you know, even though I'd have a real hard time rooting for the Mets in the World Series, I'd root for Jay.
You're going back to the days of Buddy Harrelson. That's why you're not going to root for him.
I'm old enough to remember that 70s. When the Reds lost to a team in the playoffs that barely finished above 500.
Oh, gosh, yeah, 73, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Those short series, you got a good pitching staff, you got a shot.
You do, and they did have a good
pitching. Yeah, when you have Seaver, Kuzman, and Matlock, you're going to do all right in a short series.
Yeah, to say the least, even against the Big Red Machine. So.
Yep.
The trade is – You know, we'll see. The Herrera kid they got back is, I think he's a good player. I think he's got all the skills, and I think he's ready to take over second base right now, which I know if you had a vote that you would vote that he took over tonight, literally.
Well, we've talked about that ad nauseum. I mean, I don't know what the Reds are going to do with the Brandon Phillips situation. Even people here, like Lance McAllister, who've been on the Phillips bandwagon forever, at least now are starting to admit that the Reds have put themselves into a difficult position. And I've said before what I would do. I would tell Brandon that, you know, your time has passed. We appreciate you. You're a great player. You're a Reds Hall of Famer. But you're going to be a bench player. You might play once a week. And if he became a problem, I'd suspend him without pay. Conduct detrimental to the team.
Or designate him for assignment.
Well, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. And then I'd say, okay, this is the way it's going to work out. Do you want us to trade you?
Yeah.
And if he's still a problem, I'd keep him suspended and, you know, until I felt that, and I'm sure you end up in a fight with the union and all that stuff. But if he's a problem in the clubhouse, I don't see why you couldn't.
All that is reasonable. It really is. But, man, don't you hate to see it end that way with a guy that's, like I've said a few times, is going to end up in the Reds Hall of Fame. But in some ways, man, I'm not sure it could ever end any other way than ugly with Brandon. When they
gave him a contract that was too big and too long, which, you know, there's a lot of people said the Reds have done that three times now. And a guy coming up, and he was going to be a 10-5 guy. They really put themselves in a position that there really wasn't. Well, if Brandon wanted to be reasonable, he'd be in Washington right now.
Yeah.
You know, I don't ever want to hear Brandon Phillips talking about wanting to play for a winner, because he had his chance to play for a winner this year.
Yeah. And he earned the right to say no.
Absolutely. I mean, it's part of the deal. I mean, the 10-5 right. thing is part of the deal. But, you know.
Don't tell me it's all about winning.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he could be playing for a World Series right now. And the Nationals are just, they dodged a bullet there.
Well, and I have to admit, I'm surprised he didn't go. You know, I thought that he would jump at the chance to get back in Dusty's lap.
Yeah.
But, you know, from everything you read and hear, you know, he wanted more money, and the Reds weren't willing to do it.
Well, there's never going to be a better situation for him going back with Dusty and playing on a team that has a chance to make the playoffs.
Right.
So if he wouldn't accept that one, you know, what is he going to accept? The only way he's going to accept it now probably is, like you say, if he's threatened with or is actually benched.
Yes.
It really amazes me. I've said it. I think I said it on the podcast as well. But it still amazes me. This is even a question. You know, at some point, players get old. You know, Father Time is undefeated, and I think of a guy named Joe Morgan. You probably remember that guy. Pretty good second baseman. You know what happened after his age 35 season? The Reds cut bait with him. I mean, he was a free agent. The Reds didn't sign him.
He had a couple more pretty good years, though.
He did. He had several good years after that. But, you know, at some point, it's time to move on. And
at some point, you've got to realize that the odds are going to be in your favor moving on.
I can't believe that Brandon Phillips could be a starter next year for the Reds at age 36 when Joe Morgan wasn't deemed good enough to be a starter at age 36 for the Reds.
How did he hit 268 home runs when he only weighed 160 pounds?
That's a good question. He was pretty good. he took too many walks, though.
Yeah.
Clogged the bases.
Yeah, I hated those 400 on-base percentages.
I know.
2 years he won the most valuable player were the two best years I ever saw a player have. And I've been watching baseball since the late 60s.
Now, I think one of those years, I think it was 75, he had like a 464. I'm doing this off memory.
466 on base percentage.
Yeah.
And he slumped the following year. He went down to 444.
Well, that 466 was the franchise record until Joey Votto broke that a couple years ago.
But in 76, when he only had a 444 on base percentage, he raised his slugging percentage to 576.
and if he did weigh 160, it was, you know, soaking wet. Man,
you know, an OPS plus of 186 isn't bad.
I'll take that out of my second baseman.
Well, you know, his last year in Oakland at age 40, he played 116 games, and he had an OPS plus of 128.
Wow. At age 40.
At age 40.
And the power had gone at that time, but he was still getting on base.
Yeah. I mean, 356.
Yep.
I'm glancing here to see what his worst on-base percentage was. His worst on-base percentage after he was playing regularly was the year before he came to the Reds. It was only 351 in 1971 in Houston. Oh, no, I take it back. 78, he was 347 with the Reds.
Man, that's something.
And that was his worst. And he still made the All-Star team.
What was it? What did you say at age 40? What was his OPS plus?
104.
Okay, 104. So that's above average. 100 is average. So,
at age 40.
At age 40, Brandon Phillips right now, age 35, his OPS plus 81.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
But you know, mentioning Brandon Phillips in the same breath with Joe Morgan reminds me of when somebody mentioned Thurman Munson in the same breath with Johnny Bench and
Sparky.
And Sparky said, "Don't embarrass anybody by mentioning him in the same breath with Johnny Bench."
That's right. Yeah, that's not fair to Brandon Phillips because there's never been another Joe Morgan.
Right. Exactly.
It's not a criticism of Phillips.
No, he's not as good as Morgan. It's just how good Joe was. I mean, depending on who you believe, he's either the best second baseman of all time or the second best baseman of all time.
Yeah,
you know, depending on who you want to believe.
Right, because the best second baseman, in my opinion, of all time is probably Pokey Reese.
I was a Ron Oster man.
Ron Oster, Reds Hall of Famer, Ron Oster, Cincinnati guy.
Cincinnati guy.
So, you know, going back to Brandon, they do have we've been talking about the decision they have to make. And my opinion had been all along that decision was going to be made after the trade deadline. I thought that the Reds were going to be able to deal Cozart, which they barely narrowly missed out on doing, evidently. And I thought they'd deal Cozart, they'd put Peraza in at shortstop, and it would allow them to kick the can down the road on Brandon Phillips, moving him away. As it turned out, something different happened. Cozart wasn't traded. The Reds actually traded for a second baseman, and they've clearly decided to kick the can down to the end of the year, I guess. And over the offseason, if they can deal Cozart, that's one thing, and then make a decision on Phillips. But it looks like we've got Cozart and Phillips as our Bill Rosenfield combo.
I'm not
the rest
sure
of the
that
year.
They may trade before the other deadline, the right. waiver deadline.
It's possible. Either way,
they're not going to get anything for Cozart. He's an okay player and he's having a good year and blah blah blah. But he's just not going to bring anything.
It depends on how desperate some team is for a shortstop. Because, you know, for the next 2 years, he can man a shortstop position and do it relatively effectively. But he's 30. He's a 30-year-old shortstop, you know. That's not exactly a...
Where he's had one bad knee and one bad shoulder.
Yeah. But, I mean, his defense has been good this year. I don't have any problems with how he's playing.
He's my wife's favorite player, so...
I can imagine why.
Yeah, you can.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
but Phillips is going to be your starting second baseman the rest of the season. That's at this point, I think that's clear. And
it makes absolutely no sense.
If you're really in a rebuild, why aren't we seeing what we got from the young guys? That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, you know, and with them sending the Peraza kid back down. You wonder what they're thinking about him. Now, are they sending him back down because they want him to play every day, which is what they said? Or have they, you know, do they not think he's the player they thought he was when they traded for him, and that's why they got this other kid, you know?
Well, I think the idea, he's playing shortstop every day now in AAA. And Dilson Herrera, the new guy, is playing second base, so they're down there getting to know each other a little bit and getting to play every day. That's their stated reason. I have been interested to see, though, that down in AAA, it looks an awful lot like the Reds have sort of given Delino DeShields, the manager down at Louisville, some marching orders, because he'd been batting Jesse Winker seventh and doing all kinds of crazy things. And yesterday he had Dilson Herrera batting first, playing second base, Jose Peraza batting second, playing shortstop, and Jesse Winker batting third. So it looked like he may have gotten some marching orders, because that's unlike anything he's done all year. Just get those guys some at-bats.
Get them ready.
Yeah. I don't know if Herrera and Peraza are the middle infield combo of the future, but we got to find out. And, okay, if they want to wait until next year to bring him up to the big leagues and see if they can do it, all right. I mean, I think that's what's going to happen. But, you know, they got Phillips signed for another year. He signed through next year, so they're going to have to make this decision eventually. And if Brandon Phillips is your starting second baseman midway through the year next year, I'm probably going to I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go ballistic. I try to stay relatively even keel when it comes to the Reds, because it's just baseball. But, man, that would be just insanity in the middle of a rebuild to have a 36-year-old second baseman standing in the way of a guy who, 22-year-old second baseman now, who has been as high, I think, as 30 or so in the ranking of prospects all around baseball, until he played too many games in the big leagues to not qualify as a prospect anymore. He may or may not be the player, but I don't know why we're not finding out if he's the player, is my opinion on the matter. If Herrera is not the guy, okay, but we got to find out. We got to learn something about him, and you'll learn something, but you're not going to learn with him playing at AAA what you would learn with him facing big league hitters. Like I say about Cody Reed at pitcher, people are yelling, "Oh, send him back down." I'm like, you know, okay, but he can't keep pitching awful forever. But Cody Reed's not going to learn how to get out big league hitters unless he's facing big league hitters.
Well, and that's one of the things Price keeps saying, is that, you know, he doesn't have anything left to prove at AAA.
Right, and at some point it's going to be the same thing with Herrera and Peraza at AAA. Nothing left to prove. And I like Cozart, and I'm very appreciative of what Phillips has done for the Reds over the years, but, okay, are we looking to build a team here, or are we looking to not hurt egos?
Well, and it's almost like they're afraid to make a full commitment.
Yeah.
Whether it's ego or whether they don't want to take the PR hit. Because, I mean, they bench Phillips, they're going to take a PR hit.
And it's a PR hit on the heels of PR hits taken in the last 12 months from trading Bruce and Frazier and Leak and Cueto and Chapman, you know. So, yeah, they're not eager to find another to take another PR hit, I'm sure. But,
well, and the other thing is, there's a lot of – they took a PR hit on those trades just strictly from a public relations standpoint. I would say with the more mainstream Reds fan that don't understand what they're trying to do, or that don't understand why they're having to do what they're doing, and they've taken it a hit from the more deeply involved Reds fans that they didn't get enough back.
Well, yeah, and I think that each individual trade, you can argue one way or the other, except for the Chapman trade, which was an unmitigated disaster. I don't think there's any way.
There's no way you can.
And that's not really even a – I mean, I think the two guys they got back have a chance of contributing to the next good Red team. Rookie Davis, the pitcher, was just brought up to AAA. And Tony Renda was infielder, 25-year-old infielder, was just brought up to the big leagues and could be a decent, maybe bench player. But
when you see what they got, what the Cubs gave up for him a year later with less time left on the contract.
No question. That's why I say it was an unmitigated disaster. Yeah. What I think about is, there are questions. Did they get enough back? The PR hit they took for just trading those guys. But isn't it in their best interests at some point to say, here's our plan, here's why we traded those guys. This is the next generation of Reds talent that you're going to be in love with. At some point, I think when you plug Herrera and Peraza and Jesse Winker to left field, And some of these guys, you start, Reds fans can see a little bit clear, more clearly, oh, okay, here's what they're doing, you know, and they're the Reds that can be rooted for rather than just names on a transaction line after a trade. Yeah, they'll take some hit, but if Herrera comes up and starts hitting at second base and it becomes the player that some scouts have always thought he could be, then okay, you know, people start softening their opinion on dropping the 35-year-old second baseman and on trading Jay Bruce for this kid. So what they're doing, it seems to me, is they're sort of a middle ground where they're trading away all these popular guys when and there was a need to, but they're not giving the average fan a reason to a reason to believe that they know what they're doing, because they're still playing guys like Phillips and Cozart, and we're not seeing the fruits of that just yet. So, that's sort of my opinion. I think you need to just get those guys up here and find out what you've got. Hey, like I say, Herrera may not be your second baseman of the future. How are we going to know? Peraza may not be the shortstop of the future. They've had him playing left field and right field and or center field. And, you know, how are we going to know if he's the guy if they don't play him?
I couldn't agree more. I just look at Winker's numbers, and he's putting up some pretty daggone good numbers in Louisville. The power numbers aren't really what you want to see, but yeah, getting on base and you know, hitting for a decent average. I know that doesn't mean much, but
he can get on base. And Jason Linden, who writes for us at the Red League Nation and is on the podcast some, he's seen him play a number of times in Louisville and thinks he's probably a little bit better defensive outfielder than maybe he gets credit for.
Or think, yeah, he's also almost 5 years young for his level.
That's the thing. And he's gotten on base everywhere he's gone.
Yeah, I mean, he's only 22.
Yeah. And that's actually something that excites me. Herrera's gotten on base at a decent clip, Dilson Herrera. So he may be your second baseman. Winker's going to move into the outfield, hopefully. He's gotten on base at a decent clip. And the guy they drafted number one this year, and it's a little early to start calling him an all-star yet, but Nick Senzel, the third baseman out of Tennessee, I wish I looked at his numbers up here before we got started. He has been not just getting on base and having a good approach to the plate, he's just been destroying the ball. I mean, he has been incredible.
He's hit better in Dayton than the little bit of time he spent in Billings, if I remember right.
Yeah, yes, he's killing the ball. And there are people who think that Nick Senzel will be with the Reds at some point next year. That he's that good and he's that close to being ready after. I mean, he was a college guy, so you know he's going to be closer anyway. But because of his approach, there are people who think he'll be the third baseman in Cincinnati at some point next year. So Jesse Winker should be here at some point next year. Herrera at some point next year.
Well, you only got what have we got, like a month month left of the season.
Yeah,
in the minors. And he's still at low A. I have a hard time seeing him in the big majors next year.
Let me pull up his numbers here real quick.
I'm pulling it up right now. I'm looking at least the Dragons ones. In Dayton, let's see. He's played 31 games, hitting .302, .424 on base percentage, .509 slugging. He's got 3 home runs and 106 at-bats.
Okay, so he starts next year in AA Pensacola, and you don't think he can end up in the big leagues by the end of the year?
You think he jumps? Yeah, I guess he will probably jump high. Well, he'll probably jump high A, yes.
I think he will. I think he will. This is all presuming, of course, that he keeps hitting. But
that's what we're...
There are people that within the organization that really believe that. And I don't know. I've not seen the guy play other than one game when he was in Knoxville at Tennessee, and I didn't even know who he was and didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to him. So, say he's not. You know, 2018, you got he and Winker and Herrera here. If things go, here I am trying to be optimistic, but you add those three to Votto, and you got four guys in your lineup that can get on base, plus Billy Hamilton, who's the greatest player in the history of the universe.
Don't
you say anything bad about Billy Hamilton. I won't stand for
it. Are you having his baby or something?
I won't stand for it. He is the best. He's the most underrated player on this team.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, Bill, I'm going to we'll have a little talk later after we stop recording.
Okay.
But anyway, you can start to see some of the we've said for a while that the Reds have got their pitching in a decent place to at least hopefully that it'll shake out to where they have enough good pitchers unless everybody sort of implodes at the same time. Now you're starting to see some hope that they're working on a lineup, and there's still work to do. You know, what are they going to do with the other outfield spot? I don't know. I'm not on board with Duvall or Schebler as being a long-term solution there, even though Duvall made the All-Star team this year. So there's still plenty to do, and there's very little depth. But I don't know. You're starting to see. I think you're starting to see.
Position-wise, there's no organizational depth. I mean, none.
Yeah, I think they've got some top starting to get some top-shelf guys, certainly in the infield. And of course, Winker is the one outfielder. Of course, Hamilton's still young as well. But there are,
still can't hit either, but other than that.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Bill?
Ain't your courtroom, bud.
You know I respect you, Bill. Oh, but you are out of order.
But you're holding me in contempt. Me?
Yes. You're right. There's no depth whatsoever, but some of the top shelf guys are starting to look like, reason to hope, I guess. Homer Bailey's back, too. What do you think about that?
Looked good the other day.
He did look good in his first time back, and he also complained very loudly, very vocally about the Reds' trade of Jay Bruce. I don't know if you saw that, but...
Yeah, Homer needs to do more playing, a lot less talking.
Yeah, really. He's been cashing paychecks for a while and... big ones, and not giving us a whole lot, or not giving the Reds... I didn't pay his paycheck, not giving the Reds much for that. Not much bang for their buck, but he's worked hard to get back, and he looked awfully good in that first start, throwing hard even late in the game. So, you add him to the mix of all those starters, the Reds, the young guys, and again, if you look at 2018, maybe. So, you add Homer Bailey into the mix, and who knows? Who knows?
Oh, this Senzel kid? He's also 10 for 14 in stolen bases.
So really, yeah. Well, he does have the reputation of being a good athlete. He played some shortstop in AAA, or not AAA, in college at Tennessee. So, and his college coach actually said that he thought the Reds should put him at shortstop to begin his pro career. He said he thought he could handle the job defensively at shortstop. Now, that's, obviously the Reds don't agree with that, or they'd have been trying him there. But it makes me
kind of remind you of another guy playing third base in the big leagues that was drafted as a shortstop.
You talking about the Chicago White Sox third baseman?
Yeah, that's the one I was talking about.
The Cincinnati Reds also have a third baseman like that. Todd Frazier and Eugenio Suarez, both the Reds' most recent third basemen, started out as shortstops. So.
Yep. And the Reds' short center fielder started out as a shortstop.
Oh, man, he probably could still play shortstop and center field at the same time.
Yeah, and couldn't throw from either one.
Easy, partner! Man! I'm about to get you on the Billy Hamilton bandwagon.
Yeah, I'm not a big bandwagon guy, so yeah,
that's clear. But
Todd's struggling a little bit up in Chicago, but he's still playing above average. I mean, he's OPS plus 110.
Yeah, based on power almost entirely.
Oh yeah.
I love Frazier. Nothing bad to say about him. He was a good Red and
good man, and a good man.
Provided one of my big highlights, the loudest I've ever heard, Great American Ballpark. And I was there for Clinchmas when Bruce hit his big home run. But, man, I've never heard that park louder than it was at the Home Run Derby last year. That was insane. We've talked some about the individuals. We've talked about Jay. We've talked about Homer. And a lot of people are disappointed in the Reds, and they're trading everybody away. But all of a sudden you look up. They're playing pretty good baseball right now. Where did that come from?
They're playing very good baseball, and they're still in last place.
Oh, yeah, that's just temporary. They're going to be probably in the wild card hunt here soon. Actually, if you saw the ESPN preview for today's game, and we're recording this on Friday, the ESPN preview, we linked it at our Twitter account, for the Reds and Pirates, called this a game between two teams that are in the hunt for the second wild card spot. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, somebody needs to go and...
you got to promote the game somehow.
I guess, but... I'm not going to predict the Reds are going to make the playoffs. But they've won six...
The Pirates are another team, though, that I can't figure out what they were doing at the trade deadline.
They made one deal that you think, oh, that's an interesting trade, trading half a year of the relief pitcher, Melancon, and getting back some players that might hurt her return. But then everything they else, I just like, what are they thinking? Are they trying to win here, or what are they doing?
Yeah.
We know what the Reds were doing, just making everybody upset by trading away the all-star right fielder. Six straight series wins for the Reds since the all-star break.
First time since, like, 99.
99. That was a fun year. And after just a historically bad first half, what's going on here? Are they? I tend to think they are legitimately better. They're not this good, but I think they're a better team. They get some guys.
Well, the bullpen is kind of found its sea legs, you know? They've gotten a little healthier, and they've got guys that can actually pitch in the bullpen.
Yeah, you add Iglesias and Rosell Iglesias and Michael Lorenz into that bullpen mix, and it changes things, because then you can get rid of the I've sort of tried to forget some of the guys from
I blocked out that the ones that
but the J.J. Hoovers and the Daniel Wrights and the Steve Delabars.
Poor J.J. Hoover.
I'm like you. I love the guy.
I'm not willing to throw him under the bus, even though, I mean, man, was he terrible.
His ERA was only 13.5. I mean, give him a break.
Well, you see, they took him off the 40 and outrighted him yesterday, I think it was.
Yeah, nobody claimed him, not surprising. Yeah. I hate that because I'm like you. I thought he was a guy that could do it.
I thought, you know, and he's a guy that I wonder if a change in scenery might help.
Maybe, because he's another guy we talk about, Bruce, but he's never made an excuse. He just he always talked to the media. He always was a stand-up guy. I hate it for him. But
reminds me of who was that reliever that was with him for a few years and then lost his fastball a couple years ago, and they sent he spent all last year in Louisville. Oh,
I don't know.
I mean, he was a big player on the Reds bullpen.
LeCure?
Yes.
Sam LeCure, yeah.
He's another guy. Didn't make any excuses.
Yeah. Yeah, just went out there, wanted the ball anytime they'd give it to him. And at some point, the shelf lives of relievers are short anyway, unless you're... Yeah.
I was kind of surprised the Reds didn't move Straley at the...
Well, there's a couple ways to look at that. I mean, I think if they could have gotten anyone that could be a player for this team, you know, going forward, I think you probably want to move him. On the other hand... How much was being offered for him? I'd like to know, because this is a guy the Reds got for free.
Yeah.
You know, they claimed him off the waiver wire, got him for free. The Padres just released him after spring training.
And he's done a heck of a job for the Reds.
He's done an outstanding job, and he's a guy that I think is probably destined to be a reliever, but can be a pretty good little swing guy, middle reliever. They've got him under control for the next 5 years. So, I think
you're going to want him for the next 5 years. I mean, he's 27 now.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, they can take his prime and use it cheaply. I mean, he's not going to cost much. So, but if you can get somebody, a young guy who can do the same thing, you know, you probably want to deal him. But I don't know. Maybe they didn't get any kind of any offers on him. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. I can't believe that somebody that was looking for pitching wouldn't have wanted a guy, you know, that's striking out 7 a game. His walks are a little high, but he doesn't give up a whole lot of home runs.
Dependable.
Yeah.
No, I'm a Straley fan, and yeah, who knows? But you're right about the bullpen being better. I think he's destined for the bullpen. But you add Lorenzen and Iglesias to that mix. Iglesias, another guy I want to see tried back in the rotation at some point. May never happen. But then the rotation is better too.
You're wrong.
What's that?
I said, man, I hope you're wrong.
Yeah, me too, because I've said it over and over. I think Iglesias is the most talented pitcher in this entire organization.
Yep.
So I hope that he...
And it kind of bothers me that Lorenzen's going to end up being a reliever. I mean, that's a... Was he a number one?
I think he might have been a sandwich pick.
So, I mean, still...
Yeah.
You know, for a relief pitcher...
You know, I watch Lorenzen throw, and it's just this free and easy 98-mile-an-hour gas. I mean, like, he's just throwing soft toss. He's amazing to me. And, again, I don't know if he's a guy that can start. Maybe they'll try both those guys. They should. What's the harm?
Yeah, if you're going to do it, you know, do it before you're in contention.
Yeah. So, you know, the bullpen's better. The rotation, you got DeSclafani back from his injury. He's made 10 starts now, and he's just
lighting it up.
Yeah, 6-0, 2.93 ERA. Homer Bailey's back now. So a lot of things to be said for the pitching. And of course, Joey Votto's turned back into just superstar Joey Votto.
Yeah, he's been kind of unconscious.
Yeah, he's been so much fun to watch. And on the last day of May, I think I looked it up, his batting average was 207. And again, batting average is what it is. But yesterday, it went down after yesterday's game. But going into yesterday's game, it was 293. So he brought it up in just a little over 2 months, from 207 to 293. Just 420 on base percentage now. That guy, he's just not real.
He's a different kind of player.
He is. And did you see what? Did you see the incident?
Yeah.
With Randy, the fan, Randy.
I think Joey needs to be a little more reasonable.
I think he would agree with that, actually, if you saw his comments later.
I did see what he said, but you know what? It's easy to, after the fact.
Well, he's human.
But this isn't the first time this has happened.
He's human. He made a mistake. He recognized it. He tried to do what he could to make amends.
And I agree with that, and I give him kudos for that. But when you keep having issues...
I don't know, keep having issues. I mean,
there's been, what, three this year?
Yeah, but a lot of that stuff with fans on the road and just having fun with fans, giving the opposing fans a hard time. What's he done at home? It's the first time we ever seen anything like that.
I guess.
I don't know. I'm not
all in his case about it, but I don't think he helps himself with this stuff in terms of public. In terms of public relations.
I agree. Yeah, I'm predisposed to defend the guy, and so that's my first reaction. But it was what I said I wrote the recap of the game that night, and I said, "Look, that's not a good look. It's just not a good look." But you know, he's so intense in the middle of a game, and that's some of what we see. He's just so intense. You're right. He can't do that. He can't. If he's the face of the franchise, he can't do stuff like that. But his comments later were. You'll never hear another player give a post-game interview like that. He's so thoughtful, and obviously he's bright.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you're right, and I have no doubt he felt really bad about it. I have no doubt about that. But it just, anyway, moving on.
Let's move on. The Reds are playing Pittsburgh next, and man, if they can win another series, it's going to be tough. They're going on the road a little bit here. It's going to be tough, but they're playing well, and you know, every time I say something on Twitter or somewhere about how they're playing well, somebody has to come back and say, yeah, well, look who they've played. You know, they're beating up on the bad team. I'm like, whatever. Enjoy it. Nobody expected to continue this year.
They just beat the Cardinals. Good. I can remember times when that would have been cause for breaking out the champagne.
I know. And they took 2 or 3 from the Giants in an even year. I mean, yeah.
On the road.
Right, on the road. And so... But yeah, I don't care if they played every single one of these games since the All-Star break against the Braves. You know, enjoy it. It's nobody ever expected to compete this year. They're not competing this year. They're not going to compete the rest of the year. They're not going to get back in the hunt. But man, when they're playing well, have fun with it.
Yep.
It's really, in a lot of ways, a pretty good group of guys to root for. You know, they're no other than, I know you don't much care for the second baseman, but the rest of them, a bunch of pretty good guys, seems like.
Well, the thing is, and you and I, and we've talked about this for years, is what you have to realize is that young players are going to struggle. And take your victories when you can get them, and just look for improvement day to day.
Well, you got to play the young players too, but...
Well, you have to do that.
But when it comes to the pitchers especially, yeah, they're going to take their lumps. Cody Reed's getting knocked around. Okay, that's going to happen. Deal with it. Learn from it. You know,
think you see Stevenson 40 years over?
You know, I thought it was a foregone conclusion, but he's having some trouble throwing strikes in AAA, so they may. I think we'll probably see him in September.
September,
yeah, but I don't.
Well, they have to because they may be. You know, they may have some of these guys up against innings limits.
Yeah, Finnegan in particular is pushing up against that. So, but we may see him in. I expect we probably will see him in September, but probably not before because he's. I don't know. He's not taking a step back, but he's. not taking a step forward this year either in terms of.
And the other kid,
Amir Garrett.
Yeah, we may see him before the season, though.
I think there's a good chance. I don't know if we might. I don't know one way or the other, but I think there's a pretty good chance that Amir Garrett is going to be right in the mix to be in the Reds' starting rotation out of spring training next year.
And he was there was an article, I don't remember who wrote it, in the last couple of days, somebody in the local paper, talking about, you know, that waiting on him doesn't make as much sense because he's an older kid.
Right, yeah, he got a little bit later start because he was playing basketball. I think it was Zach Buchanan in the Inquirer that wrote that.
Yeah.
And it's right. So I think, you know, he'll be 25, he'll turn 25 during the season next year, I think. He has done more to impress. Early in the year, everybody was all about Cody Reed and how great he did in the minors and how much his stock had risen. Garrett has shot straight past Reed. I mean, this guy has done nothing. He had a rough outing last night, but otherwise he is just everywhere he's been, striking people out, throwing hard. So we'll see. You know, that'll be they probably got 7-8 guys that'll be in the mix for the starting rotation next year, and we'll start to see some of this shake out in terms of who's going to be the rotation on the next team they hope can compete.
The next iteration.
Right, yeah. So it's going to be the next year's – I think there's a lot – it's not fun when they're not winning a lot, you know, if they're not competing for the playoffs, but I don't know. There's a lot to look for, and I'm the type of guy that wants to say, hey, this guy can be good. Let's try to be optimistic, and you can sort of squint and see the roots of a team that could be good in a couple years if things go right. Things could also go horribly wrong, and we'll be back in the wilderness for another 10 years. I don't know. I hope not.
Well, and I think they either need to get all in on the rebuild.
Yeah.
Which means they're going to take some, you know, they're going to take some abuse from the fans. But yeah, like you said, you need to communicate with the fans is exactly what you're trying to do, and you have to commit to it. And I don't feel like they've really done either one of those things. They've kind of talked about rebuilding, but yet, you know, you've got a 35-year-old second baseman, and
yeah,
you know,
3/4 of your infield are over 30. I mean, is that committing to a rebuild?
Right. And only one of them is a guy that you're pretty sure is going to be here long term.
Right. Yeah. So I think you're right. I think they've tried to soft pedal the rebuild rather than going all in. And I think they tried to convince everybody they were going all in. But no, they've not gone all in on the rebuild. If they were all in, we'd have, Peraza would have been playing at least half the time at second base this year.
At least for the last 2 months.
Yeah. He'd been at least splitting time there and seeing what we have. And the Phillips decision, the difficult decision that the management's going to have to make with Phillips would have already been made one way or the other. So, yeah, go all in. Go all in. Let's bring these young pitchers. And they have done some of that. The young pitchers have gotten a shot.
It kind of reminds me of Houston. I mean, they went all in and were terrible, you know, and now they're playing, you know, they're pretty competitive.
Yeah, 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 no doubt about it. So, you know, if the Reds have an infield of Herrera and Peraza and Suarez and Votto next year with Senzel knocking on the door. Yeah, you know, if they've got, yeah, I don't know about your outfield, but if it's Winker and Hamilton and either Duvall or Schebler or somebody else they acquire in the outfield, you know, okay, they're probably going to take their lumps. On the other hand, are they going to be any worse than what we've got right now?
I hope they have Devin back behind the plate.
And that's something actually I had made a note here I wanted to ask you about. If Devin can come back behind the plate, you got a pretty good catching duo in him and Tucker Barnhart. You know, are they worse than what we've got now? I don't know that they are.
If you're in last place, what difference does it make how far in last place you are?
Well, everyone is exactly, and everyone's like, oh, they traded all these stars away. But you know what? They were awful in 2014, and they were awful in 2015 with those guys. You know, if we're going to be awful anyway, let's see what we got. See if we got any pieces. You learn which pieces are going to be part of the next good Reds team, and then you learn which ones are not, and so you learn where your holes are. And
yeah.
And I don't know, I think fans will buy into a rebuild more if you really go all in, as you put it, And they've not done that, and I don't see them doing that this year. And if they do it next year, I don't. We'll see.
Well, and then if they do it next year, you wonder what they were waiting on this year. Just like this year, you're wondering why they didn't make some of these moves last year.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, they should have. Yeah, they put the rebuild.
It almost makes you believe that there's hesitation in ownership,
which I would understand, but.
Now, the rumor is that they've lost money the last 2 years. Whether you want to believe that or not, I don't know.
I looked it up, though, and I think, what did he pay, $80 million for the franchise? And the latest valuation of the franchise is like $270
million. Oh, I'm not arguing at all. I'm just talking about one year. You know, one year.
Yeah, well.
At a loss.
Okay.
But I couldn't agree more about the value of the investment.
Yeah, his investment is not.
He's not in any danger of losing his money.
No, he's not gonna. He's not going to take another mortgage out on the house.
Yeah. He's not going to have to move into a smaller house.
Well, right. Okay. One last as we start to wrap up here, I'm going to ask you one last question, and I'm not sure what I think my answer is here. I may have to work through that as we're talking. But let's say we're next spring, and you're midway through spring training. Zach Cozart has not been unable to trade him, unable to trade Brandon Phillips. You got both those guys who had pretty good Reds careers. Both those guys still under contract for all of next year. Opening day comes around, or let's just spring training starts. What are you doing with those positions? Oh, not what are you doing? I know what you would do. What are the Reds going to do? Let's say that happens. What are the Reds going to do? Because they've got those guys under contract.
I mean, I don't see any reason to believe that you would believe that they're going to do anything different next year than they're doing now.
Yeah, right.
What would make you believe that next year? I guess you could say if you believe that what they're doing now is instituted by Walt Jocketty, and if you believe that Williams is going to have full control of the organization for the team next year, you could make the argument that that could change because of that reason. But other than that, I don't see any reason to believe that things would be any different in the spring than they are right now.
That's what concerns me. I mean, maybe you can make a good argument. All right, let's get Herrera and Peraza. They're still young, 22, 23. Give them some, half a season, Triple A together and playing every day, and that's not going to harm their development. I don't think you can make that argument next year. They're both ready. They're both ready for the big leagues. They've got both Phillips and Cozart under contract. They've had difficulty trading them. You know,
You wonder how much they've really tried to trade Cozart until recently. I mean, with him coming off the injury and everything, it's not like he was a hot commodity.
Yeah, there may be a market for him.
Yeah,
in the offseason.
Here's another question: who's the Reds' manager in spring training next year?
I might not have said this a few weeks ago, but I think it's Brian Price. I do. I think they signed Brian Price. They extend him out. They're not paying him anything anyway. And what's the point? Unless they really believe he's not the guy to run this rebuild. But I don't think we have evidence that he's not the guy. I don't know that he is. He's probably not the guy for the next good Reds team. But
no manager survives a rebuild.
No, he's not going to survive it. So,
and I would be willing to bet. Now, I can't. I'm sure there have been some that have. But my guess is if you looked at teams that went through rebuilds, 98% of those managers were not still the manager when they got good again.
No. And Price is not going to be the manager. That's just the way it's going to be. But what's the point? Are you blaming Brian Price for the mess they're in right now? I don't. Now, I've got some problems with some things he does. He certainly doesn't make the right decision all the time, in my opinion. But, you know, what's the point in making
a change? Has he been as good a manager as you had thought he'd be when they hired him?
No, but he's not been as bad as people think he is.
I agree with that.
I mean,
I agree with both of those statements, yeah.
He uses Joey Votto in the second spot in the lineup a few times. He batted Billy Hamilton ninth. I mean, these are sort of outside-the-box things that the previous manager never would have done in a million years. He's, you know.
My biggest disappointment's been his use of the bullpen.
I agree, and he has this tendency to drop back into roles quote
unquote. Yeah, it plays. It's the book.
The book, right?
The book.
But he's, you know, on with the lineup and things like that. Sometimes, although he has batted Brandon Phillips third and fourth more than he should have, but in some ways, with the offense, he's gone outside the book more than most managers do. Most managers go by the book. They can't all be Joe Maddon.
But he also does the old Dusty thing. You know, if a player's a late scratch.
Oh, he did this just the other day, yeah.
He goes right into the same spot in the lineup.
Yeah, two days ago, Zach Cozart messes up his thumb, I guess, in batting practice. And who's your number two hitter in the lineup? Evan DeJesus Jr.
Yep. Because, you know what it is. You've already made out that lineup card. You don't want to waste that piece of paper.
Oh, you got to use. Who knows how much ink you've got to use to write it out again? I mean, you can't be going and wasting lineup cards and ink. You know, I understand.
Somebody has to pay for those things.
Somebody's paying for that. So he's a company man. He's trying to save the company money.
Sounds like what would have been going on under the old Marge regime.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, just slot him in there. So, but. Yeah, Price may get the boot, and not very many managers survive 2 years like this. I keep coming back to it. What's the point? What are you trying to accomplish by getting rid of him? Who's going to come in here and willingly take the reins of a team that's probably going to lose 90-plus games next year? Although I think if things go well, they could be a 500 team next year. I really do think that. But that's,
I could see them being 500 next year if the young players come along and the pitching stays healthy.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's enough pieces in place to where you can make that case. But and so if you do think there's a chance of that, maybe you want to get the guy in. I don't know. I just don't see the point. I don't blame him for any of the mess we're in.
I don't either, but the two names that I think, I mean, Riggleman and DeShields.
Oh, gosh. I'd take Price every day and twice on Sunday over either of those guys.
DeShields. Well, they brought DeShields all the way up through the organization.
Yeah, and he said Jesse Winker batting seventh in AAA. I mean, no thanks. But, yeah, I mean, those are guys that have been around. And, of course, Riggleman has big league managerial experience. And you're right about DeShields. They've brought him right along, and now he's at AAA. But, I don't know. Who are you going to get this better than Price?
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just throwing out, you know – some people would say, well, we want to get Barry Larkin in there.
Yeah, that's not happening.
Barry Larkin's not going to take over a team that's going to lose 100 ball games.
No.
And I'm not convinced that Barry Larkin wants to manage this team.
I don't know that he wants to be a manager, and I'm not convinced that we have any idea what he'd be like as a manager. Everybody clamor for him.
100%.
And I'd hate to see him come in here and be another Dusty Baker and have his sort of legacy as a Red tarnished by being a manager that we all despise. So, you know, I say, who are you going to get that's better than Brian Price? And a lot of people would say, anybody be better than Brian Price. Okay, well, you know, maybe. I think Brian Price is an average manager.
Managers are only as good as the talent that they have to manage.
That's my point. That's exactly
look at Joe Torre's record before he was a manager of the Yankees.
Yeah. You know, I've got some friends and some relatives that are high school coaches in various sports, and they told me a long time ago, it's not about the X's and O's, it's about the Johnnies and Joes. It's about the players you've got, not as much about what you do with them. I mean, you can make some difference on the margins, and Brian Price has been put behind the eight ball. He's not had the players. Okay, if you can get a better manager than him, sure. But I think you need to be very careful you don't get a worse manager. And I think Delino DeShields would be a worse manager. I think Jim Riggleman would be at least not better. I don't know that there wasn't in his history makes us think he'd be better. And he quit on a team in the middle of the season. So when he was with Washington. So, I don't know. I think it's probably better than even chance that Price is gone. But, you know, I worry what happens if we get another Bob Boone or Ray Knight or Jerry Nairn. You know, Dave Miley, you know, looked like he was going to be a good manager. I think he probably got a little bit of a bad rap, but he also wasn't a very good manager.
Yep.
So, what do you think? You think he's coming back? You think he's gone?
I honestly don't know. I have no feel for it one way or another. I think that they may make a change as a public relations move.
Yeah.
It'd be a way to sell tickets.
And that's what it would be. I mean, that's all it would be. But what, you know, what if the Reds keep playing decent baseball the second half, and then the narrative becomes that Brian Price has got, kept his team playing hard. He's got them to buy in. You know, I can see that's how I see them keeping him around. If
could they, be, I think you can make the point either way.
Yeah. So we'll see. I don't know. I think we probably ought to wrap it up about there, Bill. What do you think?
Well, let's bring this right around back to where we started.
Let's do that.
Where with did we Thomas start? Pauley.
Thomas Pauley.
And I looked him up while we've been talking. I looked him up on LinkedIn. He's now an analyst at Hudson Way Capital Management in Dallas. And under his experience and his background, it says, Cincinnati Reds, pitcher / rehab specialist. June 2003 to January 2008, minor leagues, of course, two shoulder surgeries and one elbow surgery, and now I sit behind a desk.
That's a guy with a sense of humor about what he went
through. He also has a Bachelor of Science in Chemical Engineering from Princeton.
Wow.
He's probably almost as smart as you are.
Well, let's not get crazy here. Now you're just being silly, but...
I mean, we all know you went to Virginia and Georgia Tech.
No, not Georgia Tech.
Like Georgetown.
Georgetown, big difference, buddy.
Yeah, that's right. One actually has engineers that actually do something. The other one turns out lawyers.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point, actually. I'm not going to argue that one. All right.
Well, you know I love you, brother.
I know it. I appreciate it, buddy. I love you, too. Thank you all for listening to us here at Red Leg Nation Radio. Once again, we always have a good time talking about the Reds, whether they're good or whether they're bad. You can go to redlegnation.com and click the podcast link up at the top. There'll be a post here as well. That'll give you a link to subscribe on iTunes or on whatever your podcast catching device is, or go to iTunes and just do a search for Red Leg Nation Radio. We really appreciate it if you would go to iTunes and leave us a review. Leave us a rating if it's going to be something good. That helps other people find us, and tell your friends. It's interesting to me that every week we get new listeners, and it's a lot of fun. Interact with us at Red Leg Nation on Twitter and at redlegnation.com day to day. Bill, any final words of wisdom for us?
I haven't had a word of wisdom all day.
You haven't had a word of wisdom in 142 episodes. For Bill Lack, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.